The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Why was there no applause?
Now, this might be the first time we've played Barbara Streisand on the show, and it's because of our next guest. I'm going to head out of Studio 10 now, over to the rehearsal room where Golden Globe nominee Brian Byrne is sitting by the piano. He's arranged music with Streisand, movie directors Jim Sheridan and John Carney, and he's collaborated with the likes of Sinead O'Connor, Katy Perry, Kelly Clarkson, Bono and Liza Minnelli, to name just a few. Brian, welcome to the rehearsal room.
Thanks very much.
You're used to a more salubrious environment, I'd say, are you?
No, this is perfect. I've been in this industrial room many, many, many times, so this is perfect.
Tell me a bit about how you got into the music business. Was it in the family?
Yeah, well, my father, Jim Byrne, who was a barber in Navan, and his father was a barber, and long history there, but he was an amateur musician, and he would cut hair downstairs, and I'd be upstairs practicing, you know, upstairs, and I'd go, I'd hit a wrong note, and he'd be down cutting hair, and next thing I'd hear the, and he'd come up, and he'd say, no, it's... And he'd correct the chord. So, I mean, I was 3 years old when this was happening, three, four, playing the Wurlitzer organ, and I had my father as the kind of first teacher by ear.
So he'd be in the middle of shaving somebody, you'd play a bum note, and then he'd say, excuse me a moment while I go upstairs and correct my son.
Yeah, I mean, it was very Sweeney Todd, without the cut, but yeah, he'd come up and he'd finish the haircut, but then he'd go up and say, listen, just have a look at that one here, and then he'd say, listen to this chord, and he'd show me another chord, and I'd spend a week going... figuring out C chord, G chord, F chord, and then that went on for years and years and years, and all the time in this barbershop in Navan, we would have musicians and singers and rehearsals and musical societies coming through this house, and as a kid, I just sat in the corner wanting to be part of this thing, so it was just surrounded by that music, you know.
As a kid growing up, decades ago, whenever it was, in Ireland, lots of people who were interested in music used to do tops of the town. I remember doing it myself. Was that ever your bag? No.
Well, that's I cut my teeth in tops of the town, and and I think we might have been on a show. I mean, so my father, you know, from Navan, but he somehow ended up being musical director on a show in Carrickmacross,
and tops of the town, which I was involved in.
Well, now that I'm looking at you, you have a look in your eye, and you're Carrickmacross, are you RD?
Yeah, between two, yeah. We would have done Tops of the Town in Carrickmacross, yeah.
I was 10 years old, and there was a drummer called Mark Alford, and I played keyboards in the band, and this was a huge outlet for me as a kid. But, I mean, if I remember rightly, our chaperone, we were kids getting the bus from RD or Carrickmacross to Galway, and the chaperone was Ardal O'Hanlon, who was not Dougal Maguire yet. He was wearing his tracksuit, and he was telling kids, "You sit down, shut up now." And you know, he was the chaperone, and I was 10. I was only going to, I wasn't even playing in the show, 10, 11 years old, and the drummer was 11, and the keyboard player on the show, he had his bowel erupted the day of the big quarterfinal or semifinal, whatever it was. This is epic for people in the community. And this guy almost dies. They called in the priest, they anointed him. Porrick Riley is his name. He's still alive.
I remember it very well, yeah.
Yeah, this is crazy. I got asked to step up and play the keyboard. I knew all the tunes by ear. And they said, Brian, you have to save us. Will you come and play the keyboards for all the tunes? And I knew every one of them. I was at every rehearsal. And I even remember to this day, you know, there's Billy Joel songs and all kinds of, you know, skits and whatever, and I played it, and it was the best day of my life, because that dream come true where you get asked to come on the stage and play, and you save the day, and amazing.
So you decided it was going to be music. You went to London, did you, to study music there?
All I wanted to be was either a keyboard player in Billy Joel's band, or else a jazz piano player like Oscar Peterson or Bill Evans. But then I saw a poster, film music masters, you know, in the Royal College of Music, apply now. So I said, what's this, you know what I mean? And actually at the time I had I was either going to go to Berklee College. I was offered a scholarship there to study jazz piano. And then I remember seeing this poster going, this sounds interesting. You know, I know I can write. I'm not a composer, but it sounds fun. So I applied and I went down to London. I did the audition, and they gave me a scholarship down there based on just a little bit of music that I wrote. And I was in. I spent 18 months in the library in London studying Strauss, Stravinsky, Prokofiev, and I just was in my own world for 18 months in London.
You came back to Ireland. Did you land a job?
When I came back, I was absolutely skint and had a cousin who was a hairdresser and interestingly enough, set up a hairdressing salon called Talking Heads, but that's a non sequitur there.
Hair music once again.
That's it. And David said, listen, it's, you know, I have a job for you if you want it. It's playing keyboards with Linda Martin. Would you do that? And I said, well, what's the pay like? And he said, well, it's not great. I said, I'll take it. So we did a Christmas show. I remember doing a Christmas show for about 4 weeks. I had to dress up in sequin top and had to mime on the accordion and all this kind of showbiz stuff that, you know, I'd gone to college. I'd done 4 years undergrad and then a postgrad in London. And I came home and I ended up playing You're Simply the Best or Why Me? Like, why me? Na, 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 why me? So I did 4 weeks of that and I had a touch of the why me's after it. I mean, it was just, I was going.
This isn't Oscar Peterson, you said. There weren't sequins.
Yeah, Oscar Peterson. Well, he might have worn sequins, but he didn't play Simply the Best. He might have done it like this. That would have been the way Oscar Peterson might have played it, but this was, you know, it was very much a keyboard. So I went bananas after 4 weeks. I mean, they were all lovely to work with, but it just, I didn't go away for 5 years to. So I took the money, put it in my back pocket, and I went away. And I was working on a musical back then, actually, called Black Sunrise, which was based during the famine, which was probably not the best subject to write a musical on. And I did a demo of it in the National Concert Hall. And I remember from that one demo, I worked in Ireland for 4 years. Slowly but surely, I started getting requests for, would you arrange for a song for me? And then that went from the Coors to Bono to Lisa Stansfield to anyone that was kind of in Ireland at the time, kind of doing pop music or doing whatever. I ended up writing strings for them, luckily.
Now, among the people that you've worked with, Barbara Streisand ended up singing one of your songs.
That came directly from Tom Petty's road manager and introduced me to Jim DiGiovanni, who was Michel Legrand. He looked after him. Michel Legrand, for if people don't know who he is, he just recently passed away, but he's won many Oscars, Grammys, prolific composer, jazz pianist, conductor, flies planes, all the, you know, old school kind of up there with John Williams and Jerry Goldsmith and all these guys. And he wrote a lot of Barbara Streisand songs, and the lyricist that he used for those songs was Marilyn and Alan Bergman, and they wrote, you know, the way we were, all those kind of songs that you've heard Barbara Streisand sing, or Tony Bennett, you know, What Are You Doing the Rest of Your Life. And he introduced me to them. And Alan Bergman, who's kind of, he's 94 now at this stage, took me under his wing. And he kind of took me, he was like a father figure when I moved out. And he said, hey, kid, he'd always call me kid, just go home and write a tune. Go home and write it and just send it to me and keep sending it to me. And if there's one, we'll try and do something. So I did. I took him at his word. I didn't have any gigs. So I'd sit in the apartment and I'd try and write something. And then I'd send it to his assistant. And then I'd hear nothing back. And then maybe, I'd say a year later. Now, I mean, I was working in between that, but a year later, he calls me up and says, Brian, hey, kid, do you remember that tune you sent?
Sounds like Rocky's manager.
Well, he's from Brooklyn. I mean, he's, you know, but he's a bit posher than, but he's from that place. And he said, do you remember that tune you sent me, that little waltz tune? I was like, no. And he played me my own tune down the phone. It went like this. I'd written probably about 12 of those, just different, and I kind of kept, put them a little jazzy, and I imagined Barbara Streisand singing, you know, my father listened to Barbara Streisand, everyone's father in Ireland did, and he said, listen, we really love that tune, and how would you feel if we tried to write it for Barbara Streisand? And my jaw nearly hit the floor, and sent it to Barbara Streisand. She loved it. She loved it. She thought it was a bit strange, but she liked, you know, because there was a lot of these. You know, those kind of, which are not in pop songs, it's more filmic. And I said to them, if I do it, I'd like to orchestrate it and you know, write it in that kind of filmic way. And that was a great thing to do, you know.
Did you make any money out of it?
Not very much. I mean, I got paid really well to arrange and conduct it. I mean, 10 times what you get paid in Ireland, you know. So the upfront was great. But with streaming now and downloads and all that kind of stuff, Barbara Streisand doesn't make a lot of money off her own records. But she does if she tours or, you know, because people, the value of buying a record is now almost nothing. You know, you get 0.0000 when it's played or, but the doors it opened for me and the kudos it gave me with other composers and arrangers, and you put on your CV that you've recorded with Barbara Streisand, people take you seriously, you know.
What about Jim Sheridan.
Yeah, Jim. I mean, when I was living in Ireland, I couldn't get a job as a film composer because there were maybe two movies a year. Jim was doing a movie, and Neil Jordan would do a movie, John Carney, but they all had their own composers, the older guys that, you know, either they'd been friends with or... So I was the kind of new kid on the block, but I would orchestra, I'd help them arrange and conduct it for them. You know, they're kind of making the mechanics of it work, but not the artistic stuff. So that's partly the reason I left Ireland was there were more movies being made in Los Angeles. But I orchestrated on a couple of Jim's films and one of his daughter's films. And I was out in Los Angeles and the phone rings at about 12:30 at night. And it was Jonathan Loughran from the Irish Film Board. And he said, listen, I need a big, big favour. Jim Sheridan, he's working on this movie and he's come down to crunch time and he needs you to go to Daniel Craig's house to record some, you know, extra voiceover stuff for a new scene that he wants to put in, but he can't tell the producers because he just wants to do it. And can you, this is, too, and at this stage, Jim calls me at 2 a.m. Hey, Brian, it's Jim. And he, you know, we talk about what he needs and he said, listen, if you can do this for me, I'll do you a favor down the road. And I'm like, I'm in. So I got my engineer and we arrived out to Daniel Craig's rental house. 10 a.m. the next morning, he was watching a Liverpool game. James Bond opens the door, come in, and will you have a coffee? And he makes me the poshest coffee I've ever had, and I'm watching the Liverpool game, and he goes, okay, let's do it. And I'm just holding the microphone, and Daniel Craig is reading Jim Sheridan's new lines, and then his wife comes down the stairs, and she's in the movie as well.
Rachel Weisz.
Thank you very much. Rachel comes down, and I'm just looking at my friend, the engineer, and we're like, how do we end up here? You know what I mean?
No shaken, not stirred jokes or anything like that. You didn't feel tempted, though.
No, I'm usually quite shy when it comes to dropping the jokes that are too close to, you know. I mean, I sat beside Burt Bacharach for a whole dinner without telling him I was a composer. When I moved, the first week I was in LA, that's the kind of, you know. So Jim, back to Jim Sheridan, he said, I will get you down the road. And he did. He called me up and he was working on a movie called The Secret Scripture. And he said, Brian, would you like to write the score for me? And I was thrilled because I love Jim Sheridan. I love his movies and I love, he's crack. He's a great crack to work with and he likes his wine. And he'd come over to the house in LA and we'd cook and tell stories and he'd sing old, you know, anything from rap to old Shakespeare, you name it.
Jim Sheridan does rap. I can hear it now.
Well, he did a whole movie and, you know, 50 Cent. Yeah, I mean, he's an extraordinary man and we had a ball doing it.
And you turned down working with Van Morrison.
Yeah, so, I mean, I love Van Morrison and every one of my jazz mates has either played with him or been fired by him either after 6 months or after 2 days or, you know what I mean? So he's a tough nut, but he's brilliant.
Any regrets, Brian, about that?
No, because Van Morrison writes songs. He's a creator. And I mean, that job would be musical director. It's like, who's the shock jock, Howard Stern? Where he has to fire someone and he's getting sick in the toilet because he's so upset that he has to, you know, that job is very stressful. You're hiring and firing musicians all the time. So the thing of making music is a lot less. And what I get up in the morning to do is write a tune or to orchestrate or to create. And if I'm not creating, if I'm just playing keyboards in a band, simply the best. It drives me crazy. I'd rather be pushing trolleys in Dunn Stores than not creating. So I turned him down and no regrets.
Can you sing?
Very badly. I used to sing in my father's wedding band. What would I sing? Billy Joel songs and Bryan Adams songs. And there's YouTube clips of me as a kid with, you know, my voice barely broken and a bow tie singing at everyone's wedding. And I was awful. I mean, you know, I remember singing Lionel Richie. You know, I used to do the opening number for dances. And I was 13, just gone 14, you know. And I go, you're once, twice, three times a lady, you know, my voice would crack and the band would laugh, but my dad was really encouraging. He'd never, you know, he said, just keep going, the voice will settle. And so I was, you know, I wasn't destined to be a singer, but I loved singers and loved working with singers and accompanying singers, and I did lots of talent competitions and all these things, and playing for singers all my life. So I understand what the voice can do and what you need to support. I mean, I'm working on a show right now and I have to send out the demo, so I'll sing every part from the tenor to the soprano to the bass, and I have a functional voice, you know, but I'm not a, you know, I'm not a Pavarotti. I don't have those tones. My talents lie somewhere else.
And the show you're working on now, Angel of Broadway, it's about to start shortly?
Yeah, it's a very exciting time, and I mean, I'm a bit groggy because I've been up all night orchestrating this show. I mean, we're about 5-6 days out from opening night of the concert version, And at this stage, I'm just finishing the orchestrations. That's pretty stressful, just trying to meet that deadline. But we're in good shape now, and we have the most incredible cast lined up for next week, and I'm just thrilled. But it's pretty grueling. I've been working on this with my wife Casey for about a year and a half, almost 2 years. And you know, the date that's in the diary 2 years away looks very small, but when you're suddenly approaching it and you have a mountain of music to get printed, it can be a lot of pressure. But I'm very excited about this. I'm just quietly buzzing about it.
When it comes to musicals or film orchestration, is it very hard to make money?
The chances of a musical making it are very slim, unless it's based on a massive movie or a massive book, or it's a jukebox musical like a Carol King. Those are the ones that they can bank on. So right off the bat, Angel of Broadway is a new story. It's an original story. But Dear Evan Hansen was too. You know what I mean? So those musicals can make it, but the finance side of it, you have to be very good. The show has to appeal to the audience. The story has to be very good, and you know, it needs to be entertaining. So we know that off the bat. I love a challenge, and I think I'm quietly excited about this, but there's no guarantees. So you put your all into it, and if it makes it, great. If not, you try again.
Film orchestration, you get paid per job, and you hope the next job comes along, is it?
From a financial point of view, being a film composer 40 years ago, you were guaranteed to be a millionaire. You were guaranteed, because there were synthesizers, but there were no computers, there were no iPhones, where you can now do a score with a keyboard from your laptop in your backpack. Whereas back then, you had to know how to write music. It was all pencil and paper, and you know, Jerry Goldsmith, John Williams, Alex North, these guys were masters of the craft. Bernard Herrmann, they studied for, you know, they did their 10,000 hours, and there were only a handful of them. There was only a few of them. But now they're generating thousands of young film composers out of Berklee College, and you know, but to me, that there can be a generic sound to that as well. So the producers now know that, well, if he doesn't want to do it, we can get someone that kind of sounds like Hans Zimmer, or somebody that kind of sounds like John Williams, and we can pay them 1/20th what John Williams will charge, but it will still sound pretty good. So the money's gone down, and then the royalties are diminishing, and so it's very much it's a tough business. But you do get paid, you know, if you work on good movies, you get paid really well up front. The problem is you'll sign on, and then you'll work on a thing for weeks and weeks and weeks, and you may not get paid for months and months and months. These big companies, I mean, I won't name them, but I've done projects where you've worked your behind off for months and months, and it takes forever to get paid. And then if that happens three times in a row, then, it can be pretty stressful. The other side of it is royalties are great. So you work on a movie, it gets shown in cinemas, it gets shown around, you get mailbox money every month, which is nice, which is really, really helps. And that still exists and is very important for creators, you know, for songwriters and lyricists to have that, and to for us to lobby the people in Washington to make sure that they don't take those rights away for artists and composers, and, you know, to give us a blanket to survive.
So, Brian, Angel of Broadway, in association with the RTE Concert Orchestra, it's on in the National Concert Hall Wednesday and Thursday. The very best of luck with it. You might play us into the ads with a bit of a tune, something maybe you'd play the first day after you retire.
Well, I hope I never retire, but seeing as though I'm in musical theatre mode, I thought maybe I'll do a little jazz version of Summer of the Rainbow or something like that your audience might know. So,
anyway.
Okay.